If you came to me and said those exact same things, you could have the exact same story that I went through, and the way that I would treat you is completely different than the way that I treat myself. Because it's a hard burden in life to be able to walk around and feel desperate and useless. But there's nothing better in this life than being able to relieve someone's pain, and you never know when they're going to need it. I think one of the best things in life is being able to go after something that kind of scares you to death.
All right, welcome to the Rad Dad Podcast. This is episode 34. I have my friend Braden Spence here. I was just telling you, I feel like we're already good friends because I follow you on social media and stuff. And I'm not like trying to be creepy, but I feel like I just kind of know your personality and know who you are,
right?
Just from following you. We've hung out before, but I didn't mean to like spook you, inviting you on or anything, but I really appreciate having you on, and I'm excited to learn from you.
Yeah.
Just to get started, talk to me about your childhood and a few highlights from your upbringing.
It was adventurous, to say the least. I had an interesting childhood. I was born in Texas, and then I am the youngest of four brothers. Yeah, so all boys. I have great older brothers. They've kind of been the role models that I've had in my life for the most part. And kind of went through, I guess, more of a tragic kind of childhood. There's not much that I remember. Parents got divorced. There was a separation between me and my brothers for a little bit. Got back together when my mom was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, which she passed away from, which put us all with my dad. And that went through kind of a whole series of moves. And he had different relationships that just took us from one place to the next. And so we had some pretty hard times financially. So we ended up moving around within a couple of years to four or five different states, living with family, just trying to figure life out. And then we ended up in Oregon. So I, for the most part, claim Oregon.
Okay.
That's where, you know, from age 10 to 19, 18, something like that, just where I went and did a semester of college. That's where all of my friends that I know from my childhood is all from Oregon. So That's mostly where that came from, but it was a great childhood. Like, I don't mean to start off too deep by talking separation for family and deaths or anything, but it was with me and my brothers, it drew us pretty close. We don't ever fight. Like, I can't remember the last time we ever had a fight. We have different opinions, but overall we get together really, really well. So ironically enough, all those kind of different things made us get together pretty well.
Awesome. I'm a huge believer in like sibling relationships. I think it's very important and it can shape someone. And I feel like there's something special with that brother bond.
Right.
I have three brothers and we grew up doing martial arts and wrestling and just all kinds of sports. And we had 5 acres. We were always just running around. You know, just being crazy boys. And I cherish that time. I'm sure your childhood was kind of similar, man. If you grew up in Oregon, you were probably, my guess is you were running around the forest, camping.
Yeah. Like, so that was the kind of the interesting part is that my brothers, the closest one to me is 5 years older.
So okay.
5 years, 7 years.
And you're the youngest.
Eight. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
So when we moved to Oregon, I was 10. And so my brothers were 15, 17, and 18.
Okay.
So not long after moving to Oregon, I had one brother went on a mission. Another couple of years, another one went on a mission. The brother closest to me, we were never in the same group, same school, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So the friendships that I made from church, from school, Southern Oregon was like the best place you could grow up as a teenager. There's no sales tax for anything, so everything seems a lot cheaper. But yeah, we went.
Beautiful areas.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
We're just north of California, and dirt biking, jet skis, snowboarding. The Oregon coast, it's not really, it's the beach, but it's
not like the beach.
Yeah, it's not the beach. Yeah, it's not Southern California, but it was a blast. I mean, cliff jumping, whitewater rafting. It was outdoorsy. It was beautiful out there.
And in all those extracurricular activities, was your dad involved with you?
No, he wasn't. My dad was trying to figure out life. I mean, you got to think you're going through a divorce and everything, and spouse passing away, and you know this after having a couple kids, and imagine just taking all of that on by yourself, and how hard that may be. So my dad was very supportive. My brothers were athletic, into sports. I was a lot into dirt biking and whatnot, but as far as taking us out in the adventure, he did an excellent job of making sure that he was at home whenever we got home, which is good and bad on a financial aspect, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. it was good to have him around. But as far as taking us out, it was mostly friendships that kind of took us out.
Yeah. Did you discover a new appreciation for the sacrifices your dad made when you became a father?
It's growing.
Yeah.
I have a different relationship with my father than my brothers. They got a different father than I got.
Mm-hmm.
So as you know, I mean, you're from what, so when my mom died, I was 8 going on 9. So that age gap. So it's 8. What is that? 13, 15, 16. You know, the way that teenagers handle it and how they go through the different emotions is quite a bit different than what we have. And so I don't have any animosity against my father. I as odd as it is, I grew up thinking that, like, knowing that it wasn't normal, but it was normal to me.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I said I still had a great childhood despite not having a mother in the home, which, you know, personal belief is that God put a lot of different women in my life from the time that my mom passed away until now to kind of take on that responsibility. I like to think that my mom kind of plays a hand in that.
Yeah.
But no, it's the compassion that I have, or the way that I look at my father now is a lot more compassionate as I get older and as I see that my kids are going through the different phases that they have.
Yeah. I feel like the last decade, every once in a while, I come to these realizations of what my parents actually did for me,
right?
You know, raising me.
Yeah.
And like, I have a screaming 3-year-old and I'm trying to get work done. There's all these things going on in my life. And I'm like, man, my dad was like working 2 jobs and in school when I was 7 years old. And coaching my little league football team, like, you know, and
it's a lot.
I'm tired at like 3 p.m. I can't imagine what he went through, you know, and you just start to realize like any good parent made those sacrifices to raise good kids. Right.
Yeah.
I read a quote the other day that said, parenthood is always hard for parents that are trying.
Right.
If you don't try, it's not going to be hard because you're not putting in the effort anyway. Right.
Yeah. Which takes a huge toll emotionally as well.
Yeah.
Because then it's self-critical. That's, one thing that I struggle with a lot is whether or not I see myself as a valuable father.
Valuable, like, from your kids' perspective?
Yeah. So I know I love my kids, and I have three sons, all boys in our family. But I'm not very good at leading along. I'm very good at paving the way. And so that is where I feel like I am hard on myself, because I did have to raise myself in a lot of different ways. An example, all these stories are sad. And I realize that, but.
Well, I appreciate you opening up and being willing to share them.
Yeah. So there was a time, again, with my friend, we were going to one of our girlfriend's house, and we were driving up I-5, and Southern Oregon, where we grew up, it wasn't that big. Like it was a good size. There was a couple 5A or 6A schools, wherever it is. But I mean, driving from one side of the valley to the next is like 15 minutes. It's not too bad. So we were on the freeway and we're heading up to the next city where our girlfriends lived. And I get a call from my dad, and he goes, "Hey, where are you at?" And I was like, "Well, I'm with my buddy Mike, and we're going to Janelle or Hannah's house, whoever's house we were going to." And he's like, "No, like right now, where are you at?" And I was like, "Well, we're driving to the freeway. We're almost to Central Point." And he goes, "Okay, well, they had like a little, I don't know if it's Pilot or one of those truck stop gas station type places there." And he's like, "I need a ride home." He's like, and I knew he was up in Portland for work or whatever it is that he was up there for. Mm-hmm. And came home, and he gets off the bus, and his head is shaved, like completely bald. Apparently he had some sort of skin cancer or something in his head, and he went up there to get it removed. My dad's he's horrible at communication. He keeps things so close. And so that's why I said, I don't know if he was up for work or medical treatments or whatever it was. But that's what ended up happening, is we ended up picking him up and taking him back home. And that was life. It was so unpredictable. He never knew exactly where anything was going. That was essentially life growing up. But having to kind of take care of myself a little bit more as a teenager, because that wasn't uncommon. My dad would take off. He'd always, there's no cell phones back then. At least I didn't have a cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
And so he'd leave a note. And so I'd come home to a note from school, and he'd say, I was the youngest. My brothers were out of the house at that point. A note saying, "Hey, got to run up to Portland for this or that. I'll be back tomorrow night or whatever," and leave some money for food or leave the kitchen stocked. And so I had to learn how to do everything. I felt like I had to learn how to do a lot of things myself. Work, how to create some sort of stability or system within my life. And so I just do it.
Mm-hmm.
So taking my kids or having my kids, realizing that I need to help them along in the path is very hard for me, because for me, it's like, look, you lack in something, you just go and do it. You got to figure it out. Or you look around to your surrounding examples, see what they did, and just try the best that you can and go from there. My examples were my brothers.
Yeah.
From, they had to work full time and go to school. They're all married. And then so it's in different phases. They had to go through all these really hard times and put forth so much effort that I looked as their younger brother to them and said, and just saw, okay, well, they made it work, kind of know how to do it. And so I get hard on myself as a father, because I'm just like, I just expect them to do so much, and they're so young. And sometimes I'm harder on them than what I should be. And that's where my sweet wife comes in, and she kind of guides me along and says, look, there's different ways of going about doing this rather than how it was for me growing up.
This last year has been an awesome journey for me, and I am now ready to take the Rad Dad brand to the next step, which is building out our website that'll offer a lot of free resources for dads and parents alike to just become better men and also connect with their spouses and children. So please like and subscribe to continue to follow us on our journey. Thank you. When I hear that, that struggle that you have, what comes to my mind is the fact that you even realize that about yourself tells me that you're a good dad. This podcast, I created it to allow an environment where dads can talk, have an open environment where dads can talk about the trials and triumphs of being a father, but it's also documenting my journey of becoming a rad dad.
Yeah.
I don't claim to be a rad dad. This is just my journey.
Yeah.
Right. But I've preached time and time again that if you are just trying, like, you're a rad dad. So I see you on social media, you work your butt off, you're building a business, you're making the sacrifices for your family. You're doing so much more than a large percentage of fathers are doing, right? So when I hear that you have these struggles and self-doubts, it only tells me that you just want to be better.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to believe that.
Yeah.
I get it.
I get what you're saying.
From an outside perspective, and that's the hard part, right? Because everybody's always their harshest critic. Mm-hmm. If you came to me and said those exact same things, you could have the exact same story that I went through. And the way that I would treat you is completely different than the way that I treat myself.
Yeah, of course.
And I feel like that's where it's learning how to be able to figure out your releases, your your different positions and the different ways in order to ground yourself. So an example would be recently I went up to Washington. Ever since, not that COVID caused it, but ever since 2020, through different conversations with people that I was close with that went completely south because of political stuff. It was dumb. I went into I started looking more internally. So everything that I suppressed from my childhood started coming up, mm-hmm. and I started realizing more stuff about myself. And that's when I started looking, and especially being a father, having more kids and them growing up, you start looking at the different things that you feel like you're doing wrong. And I got to a point where I talked with my wife and just said, look, I need to get out. I need, fortunately enough, my job is, my company is, we work 9.5 months out of the year, and the other 2.5 months we're for the most part off. If it's cold and snowy, I don't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess for the people that don't know, I own a paver company, right? So we lay bricks when it's good weather. And so I went up to Washington, and my brother is just a massive hero of mine. He took time off of work, and we did a whole bunch of things that he knows that I like. I love thrill seeking stuff. I'm up for any sort of adventure. So we went bungee jumping. He tried to tap into physical stuff that exhausts the body a little bit, mental stuff. We had a lot of really hard talks, emotionals, and we were able to go in and actually get a release. And it wasn't until that point that I was able to say, think more about what I do, what I feel like is productive and successful as being a father with my children. And with each specific children being so different.
Yeah.
So that's been one of the best things I feel like I've done, that I feel like I don't necessarily know that it's going to be an every year thing, but needs to happen more for men, where they just, you can get out, you can get away from work, and I have a great relationship with my wife. We're coming close to 10 years this next year. But there's times when I need to be able to just be with either by myself or with another guy and have conversations or just experiences that can't really have with a spouse, because it's just a different relationship.
Man, you're hitting the nail on the head. I feel like you're telling me exactly what I've discovered in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
And good for you for taking the time to take care of yourself. I'm a huge believer in that. There are times that men and women need to be selfish. They need to work on themselves to create the capacity to take care of those around them.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what you did. You removed yourself from an environment. You worked on yourself. Good for you, man. That makes me so happy. And you're right. I think more men need that. I don't know if you want to call it a release or a getaway or, whatever it is. It's just a complete reset. And, it can do a lot, and I hope it is more often than once a year for you.
Yeah.
Do you think that the happiest you've ever been in your life is the happiest that you will ever be?
No. No, I don't. I think one of the best things in life is being able to go after something that kind of scares you to death, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
I am very fortunate enough that there is, right now, there's nothing else that I would rather do for a career. I love going to work, which again can be very good or bad. But I enjoy life. I enjoy the different experiences. And fortunately enough, that as time goes on and I figure and I dial things in financially, I'm able to be able to use those finances in a certain way that gives me greater joy. It's expendable income that allows you to change lives, which is what I really would, that I really like doing.
Mm-hmm.
And what was his name? Zig Ziglar, I think.
Oh yeah. Classic.
Classic. I don't know if it was him or not. I listened to Les Brown a lot. But I think he was quoting Zig Ziglar, and he said, he's like, not everybody, everybody knows that money can't buy you happiness, but everybody wants to find out for themselves. So in that situation, I have found that the more I am able to gain success, from a business perspective, increase my income and be able to be okay with, more and more disposable income, I'm able to help other people, not always necessarily in a financial aspect, but use my resources in order to alleviate someone's pain, someone's trial. Cause that's, I'm very familiar with that. You know, it's, you know, our family didn't have any, like after when my mom passed, it was downhill for years. We caught breaks, just like everybody. But the core memory that I have for how I live my life right now is I remember, so my mom and dad divorced in Texas. They separated, and we went to Arizona. And my dad, at one point, ended up in California. My mom passed, and so we moved to California, where my dad started dating some lady. Thought that we needed a mother figure. She was not the right lady to do that. They got married and then divorced. And so then had nowhere to go, didn't have money to do anything. And so my aunt, who is one of those motherly figures, invited us over to live with her in Iowa. And I remember we were driving.
So this is all happening before you're 10.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So in... we were moving from California to Iowa. I don't know how. I've tried talking with my brothers, and I think it's, we all kind of block out exactly how exactly it happened. But there's four boys and my dad in this U-Haul truck. And I've never seen like a front seat and a back seat of a U-Haul. Mm-mm. It's just a singular bench. So yeah. How it worked out, I have no idea.
From California to Iowa?
California to Iowa.
Oh my gosh.
And there may have been at some point, I don't know if we had a car, maybe my brother was, were driving a car. I have no idea. I just remember this U-Haul. And we ended up in Vegas. And, you know, we used to stay in, I thought Motel 6 were like, that was like the standard. Mm-hmm. And it was not. Mm-hmm. If we were staying in a Super 8, I thought that was like the Hilton. but we get to Vegas and we didn't have any money for a hotel. And so we go to a church park. We found a church parking lot. And I remember my dad, one of my brothers, and I were sleeping on the grass outside. I had another brother that was on the bench in the U-Haul van, and I had another brother on the very top box, just sleeping up there. And the sprinklers came on at like 5 a.m. Who knows what time it was? It was dark though. I talked with a brother of mine recently about it. And if I remember right, he was saying there was like multiple people just sleeping out on the grass there. And when the sprinklers came on, we all just ran scattered.
Yeah.
And I remember, I think of that night often because my kids will never experience that. And I don't have anything against my father for having put us through that. There's mm-hmm. no, that's just how it is sometimes. But my work ethic is better than my father's. I'll outwork him any day. My brothers and their kids will never, or my brother's kids will never experience that.
Yeah.
And so I get to, my wife and I try hard to be good with our money. We have fun, but we're good with our money so that we can then, in the off chance, alleviate the pain of someone else financially or use whatever assets or resources we have in order to do that. So Dan, that's a long way of saying I've had phenomenal memories in my life, but I will have more and more money as time goes on, and not to boast, not to flex it by any means, but I will use those resources and able to help other people get out of, or at least temporarily alleviate the pain, which will then bring me more and more happiness in life.
What an awesome motivator to wake up and get your butt in gear, right?
Yeah.
Get the job done. I love that. Talk to me about a skill that you learned during your childhood that you still use to this day.
When you don't have a ride, you walk or you run. So, story on that. Friends and I, same friend. Mike is one of my best friends.
Sounds like I need to interview Mike.
Mike and I would walk everywhere. We wanted to go places.
Yeah.
And this was, we were 15, right? We didn't have a license, didn't have a car.
Didn't have Uber.
And so we just walked anywhere. We just made, if we wanted something, we went after it.
Mm-hmm.
So that in correlation with wanting things, but not really understanding that we were living below the poverty line. My father, I was telling my dad one time, I was like, I want a dirt bike. And, I was trying to bundle gifts for years, saying this Christmas, next Christmas, this coming birthday, the following birthday, I'll just bundle that all into one dirt bike and then I'll just be happy. And I remember him saying, he's like, look, if you want a dirt bike, get a job, save the money and do it.
Yep.
So you make do, and whatever you want, find a way to do it. I mean, you have to go through some pain in order to gain some level of success. So at school and college, we lived with a friend of mine, rented his basement, and I went to BYU. And so from Cedar Hills to BYU is 30 minutes, something like that. Wife had a car and she had a job. She wasn't in school, and I had to get to school at some point. We were in two totally different directions. And so I did have a motorcycle at that point. And so I remember, she was talking to me about this today. I remember, winter, cold, whatever. I rode my motorcycle to school, and I was working full time as well, in order to pay for college to help out financially. And Friday mornings was my design class for school. And never worked on the homework because I was taking 18 or 19 credits. Wow. And so I would have to, I would go to school Thursday morning, ride my motorcycle early, then go to work at Olive Garden after work the night shift. Then I would ride my bike to BYU before they lock the doors. I would work on my design class, my design project that was due the next morning, sleep on the couch, Thursday night, wake up before the janitorial service would get there, and just so I didn't come into some kid just sleeping. And then I would have my class on Friday and then either go home or go to the lunch shift the next morning.
Wow.
And so that was, as a kid, we didn't have anything, so you just went for it. You just did it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So growing up, when it comes to business or school or trying to provide, it's the exact same principle. It's a lot easier as a teenager, but we had to walk in order to get what we wanted.
That's awesome. I love that. One of the major lessons that I've always wanted to make sure my kids know is if you want something, let's have the mindset in the Kelly family of, okay, how do we get it? Not we can't have it.
Yeah.
Right. Cause I experienced both in my childhood. There's a little bit of both. My parents, for the most part, always supported, okay, how can we do this? And the way they taught that lesson was, there was one time where I wanted a drum set really bad. And my dad, they're expensive. My dad said, okay, I'll go halves with you. If you save up and you make half, I'll cover the other half. But, I think it's really important for kids to have the mindset in all aspects of their life of how can I accomplish this? Not it's impossible and it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Right. Talk to me about running your own business, the pros and cons, and how it all fits into being a family man.
It doesn't stop. If you're a good businessman, it doesn't stop. You always think about ways to improve. There's two entrepreneurs in my family. There are two business owners. Of the four of us, one is a physical therapist, and he has his own PT clinic. And so he goes and he's expanding his business. I'm doing the exact same thing, and obviously two very different industries. But it's, we don't come from money. We don't have close relatives that are close family members that we can go to and ask some questions. We do have an uncle and an aunt, we have a lot of physical therapists in the family. So he can rely on them, but I can't ask him questions about the construction industry.
Yeah.
So it's all very much like learn and try to figure it out. My growth has been very natural. It's been evolved. All of my business decisions have been very low risk, with a potentially high reward. So going into business, I remember I was working for a company, it's a big landscape company out here, and I just didn't trust in what my growth would be. And so I'm right.
As an employee,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Is moving up from foreman to superintendent, yeah, to project manager and all that. And I call up my wife and say, you know, we had talked about it, and she was in Hawaii with our oldest son, who's just like a baby. She said it was like the worst flight of her life. But I called her up and was like, look, I think I'm going to put in my 2 weeks. And she's been supportive since day one. And as soon as I put in my 2 weeks, they let me go the same day. So which was fun to having to deal with. But I started off doing one thing, which led to another, which eventually after the last, 6 years, I've evolved into doing strictly paver work. But when it comes to the family business, I think a lot of it has to do with your spouse. Yeah. Like, I could not be where I'm at without my wife.
Yeah.
Like, she's holding down the fort right now and taking care of those kids.
Yeah.
While I'm here. I am gone every morning before they wake up. 6 o'clock, 5:30, I'm usually out of the house. So I don't see my kids in the morning. And I never work close to home. And so I don't come home for lunch or anything. So as the kids are getting into kindergarten, preschool, she holds down that fort so that I can come home and know that my house and my kids are taken care of. My responsibility is taking care of the house financially, making sure a credit card pay, there's money in the account, credit cards are paid off at the end of the month. And I know that any sort of success that I have in this life would not compare by any means if she wasn't there supporting me.
Yeah.
So I've bounced ideas off of her, which have helped sometimes. It's just, she has a different mentality. And so it's kind of hard sometimes. So I have my business mentors that I work with, but, that's where it comes back to how do I feel like I'm doing as a father? And fortunately enough, since my business has grown, I've been able to slowly gain more and more time at the house, be there, pick up my kid every once in a while when he comes home and is from, mm-hmm, at the bus stop. But for the most part, it's been, I see all of my success because she's the main backbone of the family.
I'd like to take a moment to thank our sponsors. I'm just kidding. I don't have any sponsors. I'm a one-man show, but I would appreciate you liking and subscribing and following my journey on social media. I'm working hard to put out relevant and useful content for y'all, and your support means the world to me and it keeps me going. So I really appreciate it. Yeah, I believe that your spouse or the wife is the unsung hero of entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. They play such a large role in a man's success. I had the opportunity to be on my first podcast as a guest with someone last week, and they asked me you know, what is the biggest factor in somebody's capacity to take risks? And I told him my answer was, it's who you marry.
Yeah.
Cause once you're married, you're locked in. It's two decision makers, right?
Yeah.
If you're doing it right, I guess.
Right.
But, if your spouse doesn't allow you to take those risks, you're probably not going to be an entrepreneur. Yeah. Like if you're, there are wives out there that would get that call from their husband and say, there's no way you're quitting. Yeah. Not until this, and this happen, you know, or whatever. But, the fact that she said, yeah, let's do this. And I got your back. I mean, here you are today.
I definitely keep her on her toes. And sometimes it's good. Sometimes it's really bad. But overall, she's learned to trust that I've thought things through, and I really think that it's the best option. I really don't take any too many unnecessary risks. If I'm purchasing something, she knows that financially I've thought it through, that we have the money that we'll be able to provide for it. And she also knows my background, that I will not ever put my kids in that situation or her.
Yeah.
She doesn't ever have to worry about that. And so if it comes to, gosh, I mean, once you're in the construction industry, you're hundreds of thousands of dollars that you can, that go really quick. Trucks, if you want a good truck, you're 50 grand.
Easily.
Used. 50 to, I mean, it depends on how nice of a truck you want, but 50 to $100,000.
Yeah.
Equipment, again, 50 to 65 for a skid steer, mini X. So you can get into, just in those three things, you can get in 150,000 very quickly.
Yeah.
And fortunately enough, she's been able to recognize that I know what I'm doing. I've thought it through, and that worst case scenario, I'll find a way to do it. A funny story, keeping her on her toes. She, when we were at BYU, again, she didn't come from a family of money. I didn't either. So you find any way that you can in order to make some money, any side cash. So, ever since this story, I'm fascinated with what people value things at. So I was walking home and, saw a futon on the side of the road, said free. And it's probably a quarter mile from where we lived. And I took the free sign off, took a picture of it and posted on like Facebook Marketplace. And it sat there for a couple days, and a rainstorm went through, and got a message from some guy. And he's like, do you sell the futon? And I was like, yeah, I was selling it for like $100. And he's like, I'll pay you 85. I was like, okay. Well, so before I responded, okay, I told Pam, hey, walk over here real quick and see if that futon is still on the side of the road. Cause I wasn't going to bring it home.
Oh my gosh.
And so after school, she meets me there, and we just carry this futon back to our house. And we lived on one of those like split level apartments where you have an upper deck and lower deck. We were on the upper deck. So we take it up there, and we're like spraying it with like carpet cleaner, Febreze, so it didn't smell bad. Cause again, a rainstorm just went through. We were out there, hair dryer, blowing it off cause it was wet, and gosh, finished it 30 minutes or so before this guy shows up in a van, him and his buddy. And you know, they look at it, they sit on it, kind of do the test and check it out. And like, all right, we'll take it. So they give us the $85 and we helped them. They had like some Astro van or whatever, just old ghetto van. And we placed it on top of the van, like the legs just right on top of the van. And they did like this ratchet system to just hold it down, and off they went. And so ever since then, I've just been fascinated, because for one person, like that was just complete trash. They just wanted it gone.
Mm-hmm.
Another person, that was worth $85 to them.
Yeah.
Other people, it's not even $30 or whatever. But I think ever since that situation, she's known that we'll figure out a way in order to find money for a date night. We'll figure out money for a vacation, or if it comes to an expensive medical bill, despite being, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt, we'll find a way to make it work.
Yeah. You must have pride in looking back across the last decade and building, you know, you both started from scratch and you built this life that you have together.
Yeah.
That's really cool. If you were going to put together a tool belt for fatherhood, what would the necessary tools be?
For myself or for my, like, for my kids?
A tool belt that you could sell online, that this is the, these are the essentials you need to be a good father.
Forgiveness would be the first one that comes to mind. People change. People, how was it? I think it was President Monson. He was talking about that warden, prison warden, how, you know, the reporters were judging him for how he was treating his employees more civilly. And there was a reporter that said, like, don't you know that leopards can't change their spots? And the warden came back and said, you should know that I don't work with leopards. I work with men, and men change every day. So being able to forgive yourself, forgive others that for their shortcomings is the most necessary thing. Because it's a hard burden in life to be able to walk around and feel desperate and useless, caused by prior mistakes, addictions. It's a heavy burden to carry. So for me, as a father, kids are going to make mistakes, and without a doubt, we get upset. But being able to learn how to forgive and forget is essential to any successful father. Being able to have drive to pave the way, to be able to have, to show justice for things that they, for also for the mistakes that they make, that they need to own up for it. And it's all things to be able to teach their children, teach our children, but also things that we strive to live by. That you hold yourself accountable for the things that you say, for the heart, any sort of hurtful things that you say towards a spouse, towards your children. My kids know that I'm not perfect. I make that very evident sometimes. But I, when it comes to a point where I am too hard on my kids, you can see it in their eyes, and that hurts as a father. But I try to make it a point to go to them afterwards, get on my knees, and be at eye level or beneath them, and explain them to them that I had big feelings, that I make mistakes, and that that I am genuinely sorry, that I don't want them to feel scared of me. I don't want them to feel that they can't trust me or that they can't come to me. But holding myself accountable is, as a husband, as a father, isn't between account, holding yourself accountable and forgiveness, I think, can be the biggest tools that you have.
Yeah, it surprised me so much, the importance of forgiving yourself after you don't do something very good as a father. Because when you said forgiveness, my mind automatically went to, yeah, of course we have to forgive our spouse and our kids and that. But then you mentioned forgiving yourself, and man, what a truth bomb, because it'll crush your heart when you see that look in your kid's eyes after you blow up at them, you know?
Yeah.
And in order to move on, you have to be able to forgive yourself and forget about it and progress.
Yeah.
Right. What beliefs do you have as a father that are maybe holding you back from progressing and being better?
Keep forgetting what the word is. It starts with a D. Not determination, not diligence, but it's along those lines. It's being able to be consistent. It's very, like, I believe that I can get anything I want in this life. I really don't think that there's anything. It comes at a sacrifice. So, I mean, I could want those discipline. Discipline. I could want those. I could want a Ferrari. I love cars. Love cars. Love motorcycles. I love going fast. Anything that I can drive, I love. So I can have those things, but it comes at a sacrifice. I mean, if to gain extreme wealth, your family life will go down. Unless you come, there are a few exceptions where you become very lucky. But for the average person, you have to give up those things. What was the word you just said?
Not discipline.
Discipline. But I don't believe that I have discipline in certain aspects of my life. Discipline in a physical aspect, discipline in overcoming mental battles, but just like, I don't know that I fully believe in myself if I do have a habit that I don't like, that I can walk away from it fully.
Mm-hmm.
So I can be as creative as I want in order to get to certain things, but I don't know if I quite believe in myself yet enough to have the discipline to say, I can do this. I can do this routine every single day as long as I want. I feel like that's the part that I lack.
Why did you choose the word discipline over motivation?
Because I don't need more motivation. I mean, again, my brothers mean everything to me. In every essence, my brothers are not perfect, and they know that. We talk about that, but they are everything. At their best moments, they are everything that I want to be. And so, for anybody that's talking about, oh, well, you come from a certain standpoint or a certain aspect of life, I've already defied all that stuff. It doesn't apply to me.
Yeah.
So statistically speaking, there's no way I should be at the point that I'm at right now. So how many kids fall off the path from divorce, right? That's one. From us being part of a single parent lifestyle.
Yep.
That's another one. How many of those kids, after not only that divorce and death, but other marriages and divorces.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Moving around. So we've defied. I mean, I don't feel like I need any more motivation, because it's like, I've already, like, we've gone past all that. I can do that. But it's the, yeah, it's being able to say like, oh yeah, I can, like, I love soda. Being able to just say like, I can stop drinking soda. It's just that particular one for me is just,
I don't know that you can so do hard. Physical labor without soda. I don't know if it's possible. A hot summer day, yeah. A Mountain Dew, man.
I love Mountain Dew.
Speaking of love of things, what's up with tacos?
Dude, there is nothing better than tacos in life. There is nothing better. Like, you can make out of every type of food, whether it's Southern, you can do Mexican food, you can do like a Chinese style taco. Like, to be able to have it in your hand is just, and you don't need any sort of utensils that I have to wash later, because that's my job at the house. Being able to have a taco is just, it's so good. I served in Southern Mexico. And that's where the love started, but
it's just grown since then.
Yeah. Utah County, I know a lot of taco places, and I can go off of that. Salt Lake County, I'm still getting used to. But it's just, I mean, the pride that people that Mexicans have in their tacos is so, so much, but
you can almost taste the love they put in.
Yeah. Yeah. They're the best tacos I've had in the U.S. is down in Mexico or in Las Vegas.
Ooh.
And they're called Tacos El Gordo. And those are, yep. It's I know. Fatty's I've been taco. There. Yeah.
Yeah.
They have several there, and they're so good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm getting hungry.
Yeah.
I end the podcast with the same question for every guest. And that is, if there's one lesson you want to leave with your children when you're no longer here, what is that lesson? Yeah.
So I listened to a lot of your podcasts today. Saw that common theme. It's been really hard to try and figure out how to answer that question. Something I want to leave in my kids. I try very hard to be a good friend. I'm an excellent friend. It's not always reciprocated in the way that you want to. Somehow, me as an extrovert, I'm very attracted to introverts, which is terribly frustrating. It's terribly frustrating. And our friend James, comment for him. He's done better over the years, but man, it was really hard to get connected with James. And that hurts. That hurts sometimes. And it's no fault of his own. But I think a lot of it has to derive from moving around. I mean, Utah is my 9th or 10th state that I've lived in.
Yeah.
So having to become this chameleon of trying to create friendships in a very short and very rapid way. I'm clingy. I'm super clingy. And so when he gets to that point, I try really hard to maintain that friendship. I talk with friends from high school still. I'm that guy. I'll still call people. If you ask my wife, Pam, I will, out of the 5 days of the week, I'm usually coming into the house, three of them, just because I'm calling somebody.
Really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So to leave for my kids, you know, the scriptures talk about, you know, Christ always talks about, here I am, I'm at the door and I knock, right? Sometimes it takes a while for people to open up that door. But there's nothing better in this life than being able to relieve someone's pain, and you never know when they're going to need it. I hope that my kids take everything that's good from me and they leave everything. I hope they become so much better than I am. I hope they can stand on my shoulders and be so much taller. But there's people going through very, very hard times, and we're all pretty good at putting up the smoke and mirrors.
Yeah.
And so it's valuable. It's necessary for us to stick around and let people know that we're there. And I hope that they can be, I hope that when they pass from this life, when I do, the Heavenly Father can sit with them and say, you know what? There's a lot of people that left, and I really appreciate you just sticking around for a little bit longer, because you relieved the pain that they didn't believe that I could give them. So,
yeah. Thanks for sharing that. Yeah. And thanks for sharing your thoughts, experience, and insights. And I'm proud to call you a friend and proud of you as a father and the man that you are. So thank you.
Thank you.
Cool.